This edition of the Arts Review was first broadcast on the 5th of February 2016 on Monocle 24.
Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. Today, we're gearing up for the weekend with a look at what's on at the cinema. And to guide us through some of the new releases is film critic Anna Smith. On our screens today are Trumbo, a look at Hollywood in the 1940s as it turned its back on anyone with communist beliefs, Janis, Little Girl Blue, a new documentary about the life of legendary singer Janis Joplin, and finally, the latest production of Dad's Army. Can it live up to the success of the 1960s TV sitcom? That's all to come on today's edition of the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. Welcome to the show, Anna. Now, the first film up for discussion today is Trumbo, which tells the story of Hollywood in the 1940s when many industry figures were blacklisted due to their political beliefs. The screenwriter, Dalton Trumbo, leads the fight against government and studio bosses. Let's first take a listen to a clip from the movie.
You talk like a radical, but you live like a rich guy.
The perfect combination. The radical may fight the purity of Jesus. But the rich guy wins with the cunning of Satan.
Your next deal is going to make you the highest paid writer in Hollywood. Where do I sign?
Are you not, or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party?
Many questions can be answered yes or no only by a moron or a slave.
No studio will ever employ a member of the Communist Party.
Decent Americans feel that Hollywood is just a haven for overpaid traitors.
Buddy, I got nothing to say to you.
A clip from the movie Trumbo, directed by Jay Roach. Now, to start with, Anna, can you set up a little bit Dalton Trumbo and his battle in Hollywood?
Well, when we first meet him, he's played by Bryan Cranston, I should mention, from Breaking Bad, so terrific there. But when we first meet him, he's a successful screenwriter. Everything's going well, living in a fabulous house with his family. He's the toast of the town. But there are rumblings about communism in Hollywood. He's a staunch member of the party, and he and several of his colleagues are quite outspoken about their beliefs, their political beliefs. And they're quite confident that they're not going to get locked up for it. But things shift a little, and he ends up being imprisoned. And the film follows him during that time, but primarily afterwards, when he's trying to make a living while being actually blacklisted. So he's secretly working and writing screenplays for pennies, really, when he's a massively successful Hollywood writer. So it's kind of a rise and fall and possibly rise again story.
And of course, within the story lurks the writing of Spartacus in secrecy.
That's right. His extraordinary sort of finale that you know, he was writing kind of B movies for so long, and then eventually the word got around that, you know, you could hire Dalton Trumbo on the quiet. And Kirk Douglas himself came to him and said, look, I really want you to write Spartacus. And in the end, they named him. It's giving nothing away, of course, the film, because this is history. They named him as the writer, and that's one of the things that was instrumental in the blacklist being sort of disbanded.
Now, Hollywood generally loves films about Hollywood. Is this a film they're going to love or hate?
I think generally, I mean, Bryan Cranston is up for an Oscar, so that's a good sign. It goes fairly soft on Hollywood, I think, generally, and politically it shies away from sort of the deeper details. It takes quite a light approach, but it looks at a dark time in Hollywood history, but with a very comedic bent.
I mean, it's such a fascinating story that has been covered before. And I think some of the criticisms is perhaps that it's dumbing down a bit to an audience that already knows a certain amount about the subject and is sort of hungering for a bit more sort of depth.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. I wouldn't come here if I want a serious kind of in-depth look at what happened and a great amount of detail. I mean, I didn't know a great deal about it. It didn't teach me anything new. It did entertain me. It amused me. And I suppose, in one sense, it's a story that people can relate to because it's someone who's standing up for their beliefs, which is a classic Hollywood story, of course, and sort of being penalised for it. But at the same time, no, I mean, don't come here looking for an in-depth exploration of that era.
Interesting casting and a cameo from Helen Mirren. Who does she play and how does she play it?
Well, she plays a wonderful character. I wouldn't say she's necessarily a wonderful woman. She's quite demonised in this film, but a woman called Hedda, who is a gossip columnist, and she made it her business to kind of out these communists in her column, and really was quite instrumental in sort of getting him sort of demonised. So she also has a wonderful array of hats. Apparently this character wore a different sort of fascinator every day, and Helen Mirren has a lot of fun with that, and she's that kind of person that can wither someone with an imperious look, and so she's really well cast with that.
Controversy in Hollywood then and again now. Do you think because of the controversy over the Oscars, this film might spark interest amongst the audience in a kind of palpable way?
I wonder. I mean, I think I wouldn't say it's that topical because it's such a different argument that's going on in Hollywood at the moment. But yes, there are parallels in terms of the fact that it's divisive, and that, you know, things will be regressive then. And, you know, there are, you know, in terms of the race around Hollywood at the moment, that there are people saying that it's kind of regressing rather than moving forward. Yeah.
Well, Trumbo premiered at last year's Toronto International Film Festival before being released in North American cinemas. It rolls out across Europe throughout February, landing in the UK today. Next on our list is Janis, Little Girl Blue, Amy J. Berg's depiction of legendary singer Janis Joplin, who rose to fame in the 1960s before tragically dying in the 1970s from a drug overdose, aged just 27. The documentary, which is narrated by the singer Cat Power, used archive footage and studio interviews to paint a picture of her complicated character. Let's hear a clip of Janis, Little Girl Blue.
I started singing when I was about 17, and I could sing. It was a surprise, to say the least.
Okay, you guys, is everybody ready? Oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz?
She, like, took a flag and made a place in rock and roll for women. She was the first.
My friends all drive Porsches. I must make amends.
Janis was fearless with her pain and with her truth.
Worked hard all my lifetime. No help from my friends.
Feeling things and really getting into it? That's fun.
So, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes Benz? Everybody.
A clip from the new documentary Janis, Little Girl Blue, on the life of the singer Janis Joplin. Now, and amazing that after 45 years after her death, this is the first documentary on her life.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? Because, I mean, as we heard just then, what a unique voice. Absolutely incredible. I was getting chills just listening to that. But also a fascinating story, very tragic story. But she had a very strong character, as is clear from her work and is clear from this film. And they have wonderful access. Her family gave full approval to the film. So you've got her sister talking very candidly about her. There's also access to her scrapbooks and her letters to her family, where she's sort of pouring her heart out. So it's a fascinating watch.
The filmmaker, Amy J. Berg, tell us a little bit about her. And I gather it took years for her to get this documentary made.
Well, it's a major thing. And I think it's incredible tribute to documentary makers when they do spend so long getting all the material together and make sure it's right. She is a very well-respected documentary maker. She normally deals with even darker subjects, I would say. There's West of Memphis about men accused of murder, and there's Deliver Us from Evil about a paedophile. So, I mean, she's no stranger to difficult subjects. So she really uses that kind of probing mind to tackle some of the more uncomfortable parts of Janis's past.
And in this film, even though Janis Joplin only lived 27 years, there's so much story to tell. How is it divided between her early pre-fame years and then her fame years?
Well, it's one of those that doesn't necessarily move deeply chronologically. It sort of darts back and forth. I mean, you start off talking about Janis and give you a fairly traditional background to her home in Texas and growing up rather unpopular in school and things that would mark her deeply. But as it goes into her adulthood, it revisits that period, just as she talks about in interviews or alludes to it, or goes hilariously to her high school reunion at one point, which is, the footage from that is extraordinary. You know, everyone's queuing up for her autograph, but she's practically crying, saying, well, no one invited me to the prom. And you can tell that she's still deeply marked by it. So it darts back and forth in a responsible way, and I think in a way that works.
Amazing to get that archive footage.
Amazing.
That's been lurking somewhere hidden. And does it, by the end of it, does it illuminate the character of this kind of young, tormented, talented artist? What kind of a portrait does it paint of her?
It does, and I think largely thanks to the testimonies of her close friends and family, and a lot of her lovers as well, talk very frankly and talk about how she was so damaged by her experience at school primarily and at university, and how cruel people were to her, perhaps without realising how cruel they were being. And she had terrible self-image in terms of her physical appearance. But yes, of course, as soon as she opened her mouth, she was a goddess. So it was about finding the fame, and the fame kind of making up for that level of insecurity, which of course we've heard before.
And yet when you listen to her music, you sort of do hear that sorrow and pain in her voice. Well, definitely one to watch. Janice Little Girl Blue premiered at last year's Venice Film Festival and is out in the UK today. It will be shown at the Belgrade Film Festival later this month. We're going to end on a light note with a new Dad's Army film. Dad's Army was a popular British sitcom that came out in the late 1960s about a small group of Home Guard volunteers during World War II getting ready for a German invasion. It was turned into a film in 1971, and now a new version is being released in cinemas today. Anna, this is such a quintessentially British story with British humour. Will it have international appeal?
There's a good question. I suppose the TV show itself has exported, so if you're familiar with that, then you'll have some kind of sense of what it's all about. But yes, I think there are two potential problems here, which is that it is very British, but also that it's quite dated. And,
really?
You know, why make the film now? I mean, I was quite hopeful because they've got a tremendous cast, Toby Jones, Bill Nighy, many more wonderful actors who really do their best. But in terms of the comedy, it feels very small screen. And also, how relevant is it now? You know, that kind of slightly hokey, very male, sort of patriarchal wartime comedy.
Well, let's have a listen to a clip from the new movie of Dad's Army.
Oh! Do something!
Look! Don't panic!
Captain Manwaring, we have discovered something terribly exciting.
Some sort of code.
Do me in... No, it's from English about you.
What sort of language is that?
German, there.
That was a clip from Oliver Parker's Dad's Army. For those unfamiliar with the story, can you fill us in a little bit about what the focus is and the plot lines?
Well, the idea is the Home Guard, the voluntary service in the war, in Walmington-on-Sea, a fictional Sussex seaside town, made up of a ragtag bunch of gentlemen, some of them are perhaps a bit long in the tooth, some of them a bit green around the gills, who do their level best to sort of help stand attention and to help, you know, the war effort. But really, you know, they're a bit useless, and that the humour comes from that. But there's a warmth, isn't there, in the setup, I think, from the sense that they're very well-meaning. The trouble with this film, though, the story doesn't really know what to do with the characters. The characters are really well recreated, but the story just feels like a very stretched-out version of the TV show.
The television series really was a cast of men. Catherine Zeta-Jones has a starring role. Who does she play, and what role does she have in the film?
She does. She plays an exotic journalist who comes in to report on the Home Guard, all very glamorous, clad in designer clothing, and turns all the men's heads. So she's tremendous. And actually, there are other roles for women which weren't in the TV series. So Captain Mannering's wife, who you never see in the TV show, actually comes up, and we actually see she's played by Felicity Montague, who I know from Alan Park and such like. He's tremendous. So actually, there it is a little bit more female friendly than the TV show.
I think definitely the popularity of the television show was that certain kind of British sense of humour. I wonder if in updating it that British sense of humour has turned a little more slapstick than the dry wit of the TV series.
Yeah, I think it is mostly physical comedy is where the laughs come, and when they try to do innuendo as they did in the TV series, it falls a bit flat. And yeah, I mean it's a mixture of physical comedy, character comedy, innuendo that would go over the heads of kids, so kind of family friendly stuff. But as I say, it feels very stretched out, and there were long periods in the press screen I went to where you could hear a pin drop, which isn't what you want in a comedy.
Absolutely not. Do you think this was made with an idea to have a franchise. So you have Dad's Army 1, Dad's Army 2, Dad's Army 3. Was there sort of a long view to this, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, obviously, you know, they don't look a gift horse in the mouth. Distributors would be happy if it's a success and they think about a sequel. But I get the impression this was done, it's been a long time in the planning since the 90s. It was done for the love of the show and thinking that it could work on the big screen. And I will be very interested to see if audiences like it as little as critics have done.
Oh dear, well, if you're tempted, Dad's Army is out in the UK, Ireland and the USA today. Look out for it in the Netherlands and Brazil this spring. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks to my guest, Anna Smith. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian de Baez. The show was produced by Holly Fisher. We'll be back at the same time next Monday to talk art exhibitions. But for now, goodbye and thanks for listening.